Oh man. Sonny Rollins and his quartet with Strode Road. It's from his 1956 album, Saxophone Colossus. And indeed, that's what he certainly was, a colossus. Rollins, of course, is on tenor sax, Tommy Flanagan on piano, Doug Watkins on bass, and Max Roach on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yutrice Lead. And we pick up from where we've been leaving off, but we are following a stream of consciousness to make it very plain on certain subjects. And so we continue that discussion or that trend of thought today. Well, a lot is happening. And what I first want to bring to your attention is that as quiet as we are keeping it, we're right on point. We are smack dab on point in our analysis. So we shouldn't be very surprised at any development because we've been tracking these things and talking about them in the way that most news agencies will not talk about them. They talk about them as news developments, and each development is a story. What we are doing is looking at how things are evolving and what do certain things mean, and therefore, incorrectly interpreting these meanings, we get the big picture. You've heard me complain a lot about the relationship within the Democratic Party between even high-ranking members of the party and the leader of the party, the House lead, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And I talked about the arrogance of Ms. Pelosi in so many ways, where hiding behind this idea of super civility, and she's, the shrinking violet. She actually is a formidable political operative. And of the old school, what is the old school? The old school is where the party faithful simply executes. It does things that it is told to do. Whether this is what they want or not, whether this is good or not, whether this is what the people want or not, the party leadership on its own seems time and again to go back to the old playbook. They set the rules and people execute the plan. It hasn't had much luck with the rank and file of the party, and we therefore misconstrue over and over and over again what a political party is supposed to be and to do. Right now, for example, where we find ourselves in direct contention with an administration that is absolutely disdainful of the people. The president envisions himself as king and lord of lords, king of kings and lord of lords, where we are clear that he's unhinged, we are clear that he is not functioning with all cylinders. We are clear that there's something fundamentally wrong with him. We nonetheless are afraid to disobey him. He is ordering people left, right, and center to break the law. Do not testify. Even if you are called to testify before a duly constituted, constitutionally constituted agency of law. Don't go there. Don't say anything to them. Don't talk to this one. Don't talk to that one. Lie to this one. Lie to the next one. This is the presidency that we have. And it has, in a short time, halfway through the term, Trump has sufficiently infected the body politic to the point where it will take a massive amount of energy and time, not to mention money, to reconstruct it and bring it back to some semblance of normalcy. We have the three branches of government right now operating like gangsters, doing whatever they want to do, lying like crazy, misrepresenting things, betraying even the country. These are the people who are so patriotic, but they all seem to be acting like gangsters. I have no idea how we get out of this one, but I can tell you that there's a little tactic I think we ought to try as a collective, and that is to become unmanageable and ungovernable and unpredictable as an electorate. We have to misbehave a little bit. We have to disregard the leadership because it has disregarded us for so long. And this is a funny thing. It seems to be a bipartisan effort. The Democratic leadership is as odious, as contemptuous of the electorate as the Republican leadership. And I cannot help but think that in a time like this, it falls to the people to remind all these different agencies of the government that we matter. There's no reason we should accept the Lone Ranger mentality of Nancy Pelosi, who, comes down from the mountain with the tablets of stone. And everybody who is a Democrat ought to fall in line and do as she says. That's what I thought a party is. A party is itself a political unit wherein the body politic is governed by values and the edicts of the party and so forth. But no, that's not how this has been working. Quiet as it has been kept, and I've been talking about this, the Pelosi brand of politics is you do as I tell you to do. And we have grown men and women elected by their districts who are waiting their turn with Mother Dearest to find out what she is commanding them to do, to keep us in line. I didn't think that that was the purpose of a party, but apparently that's the purpose of a party. It's a dictatorship. And we arrive at a point that simply does not make sense. This is precisely the time to raise all kinds of hell. This is the time that people ought to be misbehaving, because the party for several years now has been betraying the aggregate interests of the people. It's doing what it wants. And it has all kinds of ways of explaining away why it can't do what the people elected the party to do. Well, you know, just be a little patient. We'll get to it sooner or later. But we have other priorities for the moment. There are always other priorities. Priorities never are about criminal justice reform that is meaningful and real. Priorities never include looking closely at an education budget, healthcare delivery across the board. It has nothing to do with really what comes out of the other end of the pipe when it comes to senior citizens and what they need to thrive. It has nothing to do with quality employment. They have all other kinds of priorities. For years and years, it's the same old story. I'm sick of it. That's why I opted out. I know the game. I want no part of it. But really, when you think about it, there's a strategy here that could be used to terrorize everybody. And what would terrorize everybody in political leadership is an electorate that does not follow their commands. They have failed to show prowess and competence in their political leadership. This is 2019. And since the 1950s, and I'm being generous now, it was earlier than that, but I'm going to go with the 1950s. We have people in the streets demonstrating and battling and moving in their own communities to aggregate political power to get certain things done. You mean to tell me in all this time, not even the basics have been achieved convincingly? So my theory is this is the time to become ungovernable, unpredictable in our political activities and actions. We should make it so that they cannot predict what we are going to do. And we should ourselves understand how vitally important it is to be unpredictable. The party has overall failed, continues to fail. And this is not just for Democrats. This is also applicable to the progressives. And we do not need to suffer this indignity any longer. We have to put an end to it. And we have to send a message to them that there is a hefty price they're going to have to pay. And the price that they're going to have to pay is to be paid to us. We will abandon this party or these parties, and start something else. Or we'll get a lot of flack. You're destroying the potential of success. Okay, I could live with that. Because for centuries, people have been trying to get it through your thick heads what it is a party is for. You have examples all over the world of people organizing. And it is the ordinary people who create the change that is needed. It's not top-down leadership. We're tired of that. It yields nothing. You're not listening anymore. You see, we have to give them the opportunity to disprove our claims. I'm saying you're not listening. You're not listening to what we are asking you to do, which means you are ineffective as leaders. You're seeing to a whole different agenda. You are more interested in protecting your donors and your donors' interests. You're more interested in you know, fattening your electoral accounts. You're more interested in prestige. You're no longer, I mean, far be it from you to actually get into the trenches. You're not interested in that. Your fights are all, how should I say, theoretical. It is the ordinary people who are bearing an inordinate share of the brunt and the burden of leadership. So if they're doing that, and they're doing that now, why don't we help and assist those people who are in the trenches and have been in the trenches and give them a little boost and get them and ourselves out of a party that appears to be very confused about what it's supposed to do, why it has been elected, why it is in a position of power. The Democratic Party by itself can't do a damn thing. It absolutely needs propulsion from the people on the lower rungs of the ladder. These are the people who keep this party and up and running and propped up to make it look like they're powerful. We have to start cutting strings, making examples of failed leadership. And we should not be embarrassed about it. Remember, I said the number one imperative is what? Survival. And these people on a daily basis are imperiling our collective survival. We need to take that seriously. This is not a joke. We should declare war where there is a need to declare war in this party and on this party. The progressives, oh, you say you're progressive? Prove it. Prove that you are progressive. I'm not talking about what you have printed on a pamphlet. I'm not talking about what you've posted on a website. Show me some actual concrete gains, some gained ground, political ground. Show me where you have moved from point A to point B and C and D. Show me what you have been able to institute for the collective good. I don't want to hear your philosophies. I don't want to hear any more of your promises about what you're going to do. These things actually annoy me, because I look at what it is you say you are for and what you are committed to, and I'm looking for the evidence, which is not there. All you've been doing is talking and posing. You're not organizing, and you are, I hope people are watching this, you're still holding fast to racist principles. In all these years, your leadership is almost totally white. And by white, I mean white supremacist white. Or you have your pratings down pat. You for good and clean environment and blah, blah, blah. Fine. Where is your presence in these affected communities? An ongoing presence. Show me where you are organizing. Show me where you are mobilizing. Not theoretically. Show me a reasonable progression. It's not there. Because as progressive as you claim to be, your number one commitment is to the same old racist order. You're not promoting my interests. You're not securing my interests. And by my, I mean not personally mine, but a community of people like me. You have the same mentality as the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Come out and vote. And that is supposed to prove something, how committed you are to the patriotic ideal. Well, I don't have time for that anymore. I'm done with that. As we used to say in geometry, when you prove a theorem, quod erat demonstratum. We have done that over and over and over again. We have proven our merit. We have proven our worth. We have proven how strategically important we are. You, the so-called leaders, the leaders with vision, have fallen down on the job. You're failing spectacularly. In some cases, spectacularly, you're failing. And I'm saying we either get serious or we get out, give up. But we should stop torturing ourselves that something is happening in our interest. Very little is happening in our interest. I remarked about how these leaders campaign in our communities. They come, they see Reverend Sharpton, and they go to Sylvia's and have some fried chicken. And they get a couple of photographs taken, and there you have it, proof that they have traversed the black community and the Latino community. If you want proof, here's a photograph right here. I had lunch with Reverend Sharpton at Sylvia's. And that represents my commitment. And we let them get away with this garbage. In this day and age, we let them get away with that. So we've reached the point of self-insult. We insult ourselves by accepting this as leadership. I don't, which is why I am not active in the party. I was a very, very active person, very politically involved. But you see the games being played, and they are designed to consume your time and your effort and your energy and whatever little bit of money you have. I'm done with that. I've been done with that. So the more we misbehave, the more unpredictable we become in our political conduct, the better we protect our interests. These people, we've given them the benefit of time, the benefit of doubt, and they failed spectacularly on all counts. And yet, for some bizarre reason, we keep repeating the pattern, which tells us how damaged we are. The tactic that I'm recommending is that we let them know we are completely disgusted with their performance. Well, of course, not all of them. It's not 100% applicable, but it's high, the percentage of people not doing what we are asking them to do is very high. The leadership is actually working against our collective progress and interests. So that when we talk of politics, we're talking of a tiny number of people who can all fit in a room and cut deals all day long that have nothing to do with us. We need to serve them, notice. We're done with that. And that you shouldn't be too confident that we will support this party, which does not support us. You'll see how fast they catch themselves, and they'll make an effort because you're holding a hammer over their heads and you're willing to use it. All fear must be dissipated. Don't be afraid of any of that. What are they going to do? Treat us even worse than they're treating us now? I don't think so. You see, because we have enormous power, which we refuse to use in our own interests. We have yielded our power to people who are incompetent or marginally competent, inexperienced, solely convinced that they are in power because, well, they wouldn't be in power if they weren't smart and capable and good leaders. And we've come to the table many times with the same complaint. After a while, you prove to yourself that you're not even listening to yourself. You're not listening to yourself. So I'm asking the question, how willing are we all to change tactics and to serve notice on this party to which we have had an unfailing affiliation and dedication that we are no longer asking you to do anything? We're not asking you to do a thing. Nobody else has to beg and plead and persuade and talk to you over and over again. Nobody else has to do that. And we should join the club of people who don't have to ask for you to perform. We are just going to swing that metaphorical blade and cut your heads off. Cut off that part of you that has ceased to function for at least 100 years. Find a new way. And if the new way is simply to opt out, that's a new way. Try that. If the new way is to send a message directly, you don't have to beg and plead. No way should you do that. Do not beg, do not plead, do not implore. Just simply make up your mind that you will have to sever yourself from the party or the party from you. Because it's now about survival. We've been talking about the subject for a long time, survival. You're acting in your own interests. Everybody else is. But be serious about it. I'll take this break and come back to your comments right after this at 888-874-4888. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about what we must do in our own interest to forge a new path in this thing we call politics, and that we should be fierce about it, unapologetic about it, and we should get to it as quickly as possible. Now, I want to remind you that, well, today is the 21st. It means we have 5 days to go before hopefully we see each other at the Community Church, 40 East 35th Street in Manhattan, between Park Avenue and Madison Avenue. I'm going to be giving a talk there, having been invited by the Global Affairs Committee of the Church. I am very honored to be asked again this year to give a talk. And it starts at 1 o'clock on Sunday, the 26th. There's pre-registration, which is at 12:30. It simply is putting your name down on a form that says you were there and we met. And I want to see your face. I want to look into your eyes. I want you to look into my face and begin the issue of true fellowship, political fellowship, by the way. It's very, very important. And it's another way of starting something new. We need a new way. We cannot go the old way and progress. So I'm going to be talking 40 East 35th Street at the Community Church at 1 p.m. Registration is at 12:30. And by the way, it's free. There's no fee, no charge to attend. And we're looking to create memories. We're looking to create fond memories of each other, engaging in meaningful community work. All right, so see you on Sunday. I'm really, really looking forward to it. All right, Khalil from South Carolina, you start us off today.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay, Khalil, how are you?
I'm great. It's sunny and beautiful here right now.
Wow.
Yeah, wow, your introduction was powerful. Very powerful.
Thank you.
That you touched on so many things that wow. But I will try to be succinct and stay on topic. A lot of what you're talking about in your introduction, you know, I like the way you said it's not about a party. It's about both parties. And the first president warned us about political parties. So maybe this is the fruit of that tree. Because, you know, this is a litmus test for the democracy. This is beyond politics in a way, because if the Constitution doesn't function, then what good is the government? In one way, you know, just I had to change some of my thoughts as you continued with your introduction, because there was so much content there. But one thing I'm thinking about, which I often go back to because it was so effective, was in terms of survival, self-reliance. You know, these are similar times, it seems to me, that the Party of Self-Defense was dealing with. So, you know, folks figure we need to take things into our own hands and work within the system against the system. So, you know, fine, they were young, educated, bright, young people, university educated, and they saw what was going on. And they said, you know, we can do better than this. And that's exactly what they did. And so my thinking is that you have one tier of folk, let's say, let's start in the lower tier, folks who are on food assistance. You know, donate some of your food to a food bank, and at the same time encourage a free breakfast or a free lunch program using what collectively has been donated. Then send out a press release. Let folks know, hey, you know, what you're doing is not working. We're going to use your, you know, what you quote-unquote give us against you. Because they don't like collectivism at all. Because we're collective, we're powerful, as you've been saying. They want us to feel like, I mean, they work, the politicians are supposed to work for us. And it's so far afield from that, it's not even funny now. It's not even worth talking about. Now, on the other tier, union folk, you know, one day, call in sick. If you can do half a day, do half a day. Because if this is a litmus test for the democracy, you cannot have people, the attorney general is acting as if he is a fully ingrained criminal, which, of course, his history shows he is, maybe not legally, but in his actions. Because I was a teenager when he started his nefariousness, and so he's not new to me, and he's just out of order. So this is a couple of ways, but you know, these are perilous. This is just perilous at this point. There's no easy way out of this. There is no easy way out. So, and like you said, if you want to opt out of voting, but maybe use that energy toward a different way. So when you say opt out, I don't believe you mean opt out and be inactive. You mean opt out and be active, I'm assuming.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Redirect your energy.
Okay.
Redirect your time, redirect your resources, redirect your energy. But let them know that that's what you're doing. It is always so scary when people have become accustomed to operating on a set of assumptions, and then out of the blue, they are served notice that all of their assumptions are wrong and have been for a long time. And here's a whole different way of doing things, and that's what we're doing. We cannot wait for this system to fix itself. It won't do it. It can't do it. So we are the leaders people have been waiting for. We have been waiting for. So let's get to it. And don't feel apologetic about it or that we're doing something wrong. It is time. They've had the benefit of time and support and trust and all these good things. They've squandered all of that and still seem incapable of crafting a way where we all can move forward together. They have no interest in that. They have interest in their individual careers. They have interest in their, quote, success, unquote. But nowhere in this discussion is, well, where are we as a nation? What exactly is the system that is supposed to pull us through? I'm not interested in it, in what you present to us as a working plan. It's no good.
It's not working.
It's not working.
It may be a plan, but it's not working. And once again, your introduction, you touched on so many really salient points that have so much meat on them. I'm thinking about how much harm this particular administration is doing. And, you know, and I like the way you're very fair, because the last administration was just a setup for this, it seems. But going back to the last shutdown with this administration, and I'm quite sure a graduate student is doing a study on how many suicides were directly attributable to that last shutdown. And the reason I say that with some compunction is that that was concurrent with news reports of how many folks can only miss one paycheck without being on the street.
See, we have succumbed to delusion. We really believe that things are much better than they really are. And it for some bizarre reason, it gives us a sense of comfort in knowing in this falsehood that things really are not as bad as they might seem. And that's true. They're worse.
They're worse. And I don't know if you're old enough to remember, but I do. I've always been a union person. My family has. And I remember when Reagan said, well, you know, the unions have just been taking too much for too many years. And, you know, everyone has to tighten their belt.
Yep.
And that was the beginning of the end for unions. And if you look at depressed wages, you don't have to be an economist to understand. You go to a chain restaurant, an entree is at least $10, at least. We live in a $10 economy. Many folks in rural areas, they're making $10 an hour. It doesn't add up. And at the same time, he invaded Grenada, which had a literacy rate higher than we had.
Little Barbados has one of the highest literacy rates in the world. A tiny little island like that. Well over 90%. They don't have these resources, this never-ending flow of cash. They just have great teachers and people dedicated to the idea that an education is a very important asset. And as a nation, they commit themselves to that, and they get it done.
What an interesting point you brought up. We're in an era where science, education, professors, folks who sacrifice to attain degrees in higher learning are shunned because the president doesn't read. So this is a deep hole.
This is a deep hole. We have to create new paradigms and quick. We got to do it fast. We've run out of time on that ground. We've got to get this done. Look at alternatives, fashion different ways of doing things, and do them quickly, because literally our lives depend on it. Thanks, Khalil, for your call today. Let's go to Jose from Rosedale. You're on the air.
Greetings, my professor.
Hello, Jose. How are you doing?
The old man is hanging in there. You know, I'm a bit befuddled by some of what you said in your presentation. Right? I was fully aware a long time ago of the system that we are living under, the system we are dealing with, that has had hundreds of years of perfecting it. And you are practically talking about a call to arms. Well, you know, not, you know what I mean. You are calling on the people to stand up and to resist and to make the system ungovernable. And I totally agree with that. But here's what I have a problem with. We have had a system that is so, it is set in its ways. It works for them, but it's not working for the rest of us. And when we have young folks or new folks who join the political force, and they come with a different approach to what is happening, I noticed that it is as if you're practically on a campaign to admonish these new politicians that got on board, and they're voicing our concerns, and they don't give 12 rats, you know what, about what the established politicians are thinking, because they are set in their ways. And what they want to do is to bring these young folks on board and have them become conformists, to have them become as corrupt as they are. And so, and these young folks, these new elected officials, are resisting that call. And I find it, you know, when you went after the Ocasio and the other sister there, the Muslim sister and so forth, in such a way that now you practically don't hear much about them, because maybe they have heeded your call and they have become conformists and they are learning the ropes and so forth of how to become corrupt like these other corrupted folks that's already in there. And so you have me kind of a bit confused.
Well, let me clarify. I'm not under the impression that in any way I urged them to join a defective system. Mm-hmm. In fact, that was the whole point. I was so glad when they were elected and was looking forward to all this new blood, this oxygenated blood coming into a system that was dying on its feet.
Mm-hmm.
But I also talked about the fact that if you're coming in, you have to be quiet for a little minute there. You have to assess the situation. You have to talk to people. You have to forge new relationships. You're in Washington, D.C., and I bet you if there was something urgent happening and you need some people, you need 50 people to show up, they can't get it. Because if they were working, they would have that, at least that number of people who could back them up or work in solidarity with them. But they, especially my comment or criticism of Rashida Tlaib of Michigan was her language and how she comported herself, which was, in my view, I use the word disgraceful. I still hold to that. But it seems as if either somebody tugged at her pretty harshly and gave her a good talking to. She has since, you know, brought the temperature down. You don't talk about a president. You just came in, Congress, and talk about the president. Let's go impeach this mother effer.
And no, in front of your children. He doesn't need to be impeached.
Yes, he should be, but you do not. You do not, as a member of Congress, people still forget, you have to observe proper decorum.
Decorum?
You can't come in there like a gunslinger.
Decorum. on principles and values.
Well, that's not true. And simply because people act like beasts, this administration, and gangsters, that does not mean you join their company.
But you know something, my professor? If as long as good continues to use the same tactics that evil use to hold us in our position, we're not going to get anywhere. Sometimes good have to use some of those tactics too, because evil is as one
but people confuse,
against
you confuse
good.
Tactics with an agenda, and they're not the same thing. When you come in, like, you know, the biggest gunslinger of all time, and you make quite a show of yourself, you're also marking yourself.
No, they are simply drawing attention to the things that is happening. It is for us now to support them rather than beat them down and cut off their knees and so forth. We need to support them and show them that we agree, we support the issues that you are fighting for, and we support you. But they can't be fighting on all these
issues. We also have to point out to them that their conduct absolutely was wrong. And we don't countenance that.
We don't
tolerate that.
I'm not going to beat them up and kill them over these stuff. You know, we have bigger fish to fry.
I
have to use any means necessary to fight.
I'll tell you why. And this is a very important point. We think that there, you know, we are talking in an old-fashioned kind of way, but no. When you came into Congress, whatever you choose to think about the people who were there before you and how little or how much they managed to achieve before you got there, you came into something that could serve you. That means people invested their time and effort and energy in building something. And you come in and you pull out your six shooters and you're blazing up the town.
So who should have used as an example? You mentioned who was there defending our rights that we should support? Nancy Pelosi and our colleagues. Who is there that the demonstrators take example from? Who?
But you're missing the point.
I'm not missing the
you're
point.
You're missing the point entirely. Number one, you should never, ever conduct yourself like that. Ever. No matter how opprobrious the enemy is, no matter how objectionable, you should never, as a representative of the people, be representing, in the larger sense, the people in that kind of way, with that kind of conduct and behavior. I reject it. I made no bones about
this country. And who set the standard of the running of this country and the ownership of this country?
I'm not arguing about the standard of the country.
Do it.
I'm talking about the standard of conduct that we historically, as a people, we historically have held to.
My professor, it has not worked for us, and it never will work for us. So you can sit back. And you maintain the standard, and you tell these young people that they must just shut up and sit down and learn the crooked ways of these crooked folks running this place.
But you are completely distorting my point. You've completely distorted what it is I have said.
I don't think so.
I'm not telling people, you know, well, you should join the status quo. And those things have never come out of my mouth. I'm saying, though, you have an obligation, in every sense of the word, to live up to the standard that you are hoping to set. And your personal conduct is one of them.
I'm glad you used the word hope.
Their behavior, I thought, was just outrageous.
Well, as an elder, I beg to disagree. So there you go. I'm your elder, and I beg to disagree. And if Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark was here, they would say the same thing. You don't.
But that again doesn't in any way change my view.
No, I'm not going to change your view. I'm just trying to get a point across. We need to support these young politicians so they can feel that we have at least to have the people, the suffering people behind them. We're not worried about the politicians. They'll never be able to convince those criminals in there that they must start doing right for the people.
This is why we fall. This is why the standards fall, because
we didn't lower the standards. You have a man in the White House right now. You can't get no lower than that. You're talking about standards.
You're not debating a point at all. You're just uttering very emotionally charged statements, which doesn't put us anywhere.
There's a lot of folks out there that feel the same way, just that we don't get a chance to express our feelings.
I'm sure there are. But as my sainted mother used to say, if a best friend start jumping off a bridge, will you jump off too? No.
Well, it depends. It depends on what you're running from.
You see, this is the whole point of my talk.
Stop running from things. And you have the opportunity to jump off a bridge. You're probably safer jumping off the bridge than confronting Trump and his Nazi soldiers.
If you are trying to tell me that I should see horrible personal conduct as an instrument of liberation, I will say you're entitled to think that. I'm not going to think that.
Brother Malcolm says we have to use any means necessary. And if you believe dealing with these people with principle, they know nothing about principle. That's not how this country was conquered. And the native people massacred African Brahmi. It wasn't principle.
Look, we're talking four different things here at the same time and getting nowhere. The simple point I made was that we have to set a different standard, just the same.
Wish you luck.
No matter how horrendous our situation, we cannot sink to a certain level and think it's okay that the ends justify the means. No, sir.
I wish you luck, my professor.
Oh, I'll take it. I'll take the wish. And I will continue to say that other people who can for us get a heavy price maintain standards.